This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Know-How is brought to you by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
Today on Know-How,
it's WannaCry Part 2.
Welcome to Know How. It's a Twitch show where we build, bend, break, and upgrade. I am Father Robert Ballaser.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And for the next however many minutes it takes, we're going to be open up your brain like a Ziploc bag and pouring in soup.
Yeah.
So you can freeze it.
I hope you're using the freezer safe bags
like
for
old
your knowledge.
People. I visited my family's home, my parents' home in Las Vegas while they were gone.
Mm-hmm.
And the freezer is just filled with Ziploc bags that have like various soups that have been frozen. I'm thinking
that's the best way to keep soups.
No,
you don't know when you're gonna want a soup on hand.
I called my mom. I'm like, really, mom? Really? Are you ever gonna reheat any? Well, we might. I'm like, no.
You might. Hey, you know what? Better to have the knowledge, the soup bag in the freezer at the ready when you need it, than to not have any soup at all, right?
That's right. And folks, that's why we're doing this WannaCry Part 2. It's going to be that bag of soup that you've stored in the freezer.
The soup knowledge.
For a rainy day. The analogy does not hold, Brian.
No, it does not.
We should not be doing
But it's nourishing, that knowledge of soup.
Now, folks, remember, we are actually in our Networking 102 series. It's just we took a little detour. It's still Networking 102. It's just that we wanted to focus on WannaCry. Mm-hmm. Now, last week we did a quick demonstration on how it works. We showed you how it infects, what it does to the network, and that was interesting.
Yeah,
you all were interested in, but we got a lot of feedback, emails, tweets, and comments on the YouTube video where people were asking questions about the different ways that this might infect and perhaps a couple of the countermeasures that they could take to fix their WannaCry instance.
Yeah, because we identified some of the things to look for if your system was already infected. And we kind of talked about ways to kind of prevent ever getting the WannaCry 2. But also, after that episode, we found out that there were ways to fix the problem, kind of.
Right. So late last week, after we had already recorded the show, there were some researchers who figured out that there was some very interesting principles of this particular piece of ransomware that they could take advantage of to reverse engineer the key that you would need to decrypt. Now, we're going to get back to that in the third segment of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But the first thing that we wanted to do, Brian, is we wanted to go over some of the most commonly asked questions from our audience about WannaCry. Now, there's three.
Okay.
There's three that I think that pretty much represent all the questions that have been asked. The first is, will USB drives plugged into a WannaCry-infected machine get encrypted?
Can I say what I think before you answer that question? I think yes. Because anything that it finds attached network-wise or just any kind of data drive, I think it encrypts it, right?
Yes. And this is actually something that we answered last week. Someone asked in the chat room if this would happen. And we said, well, the process is ongoing. So, anytime you plug in something new or connect to something new on the network, the process is going to seek out those files and encrypt them. But people didn't believe us. So we're gonna take a look if that actually works.
Okay.
We're going to infect the machine. Then we're going to plug in a USB drive after it's done all the encryption.
And after it's done its little display.
Right.
Okay.
So that's part one. The second question that was asked is we showed them how it actually creates the encryption file and then deletes the originals, right?
Right.
People were wondering, well, if it just deletes the originals, can I just run an undelete program and get back my files?
That's a good question.
It's a good question. I like the way that you're thinking.
Because a lot of times it's just the directory to that file, not the actual, like, not the ones and zeros aren't gone.
Right. And like we know, because we've all run undelete programs at one point or another, the bits are still there. Typically what it will do is it will just remove the marker, like the table of contents, and as long as you haven't overwritten those particular memory cells, there's a good chance that the file's still there. Right.
Good question.
The question is actually, does WannaCry do a secure delete? And a secure delete would be delete the table of contents and then write something over those memory parts.
Right. But I could see that taking a lot longer to do. So that might be not as advantageous for someone writing that ransomware.
Yeah, so let's give that a go.
Okay.
And then the last question is, and I like this one, people were wondering, well, It looks like WannaCry goes after data files, so docs, JPEGs, movies. We know that it will encrypt all that stuff.
Yeah.
They wanted to know, if I were to rename my files to like executables or DLLs, dynamic link libraries, would WannaCry leave them alone? Good question. Good. I mean,
That's practicality is a little questionable, but okay, we could try that.
I mean, it's a nice curious question. It's not totally not practical to have all my documents with DLL and then change them when I want to access them. But I like the way you're thinking. We're going to try that out.
I am a little curious. Okay, so say you have a text document that you make a DLL, and then you get WannaCry, it encrypts everything, but leaves that file alone. So what happens if you change it? Does it, like, instantly encrypt
If you change it back while the process is still running, it will immediately encrypt it. So there's that.
Okay, all right.
Okay, but no, these are all good questions, and you know what? We're making light of them, but they're serious things. We should know this. This is what security researchers do, which, by the way, disclaimer. We put the disclaimer at the last episode. We'll put it on this one. We are not, obviously, security researchers. We do not do this for a living. We're not good at this. We can show you some of the things that we found and some of the things that we've read. But just so you know, we're not pretending to be the people who are coming up with these solutions.
No.
We just find them fascinating. We think you will too.
Yes. No, I find it tremendously fascinating. And I'm curious to try out some of this stuff. But like you, in the last episode, you talked about a lot of the precautions that you've taken so that you don't infect other parts of our network here at work or at home. And so just remember those if you're going to play around with this stuff.
Yeah. And by the way, our precautions are still in place. So the only place that this code exists is on this flash drive. Do not be that guy who stores a copy on your computer, forgets about it, and then like 3 months later goes, hey, what's this file? Click and done.
Oh, man.
And then on this one, I've got the WannaKiwi, which we're going to take a look at a little later. So these both go in the same envelope.
Now, why is it called WannaKiwi?
You're going to find out, Brian.
That's all I want to know.
Yeah.
All right.
So let's take a look at our setup. If you go to the overhead shot, Alex, the same from last week. We've got our little bare computer SSDs. These are the USB drives that I'm going to be playing with. I've already got this loaded up. This is Windows 7. It's got our sample data on it. It's also got the WannaKiwi loaded up on it, which we'll talk about later. That's one of these solutions that you really should prepare ahead of time. Let's go ahead and take a look at this, because this is my sample data drive. Hmm. Here's what it's got. Alex, if you go back to the HDMI 2, is it? Yeah, HDMI 2. So if I open this up, what you'll see is the typical sample data files, just like we had last time.
Mm-hmm.
One difference. So I'm testing a couple of things. First of all, this is going to be the drive that we're going to test to see if it will encrypt after the WannaCry process has already run. These are just standard data files. So I've got voiceover scripts. I've got a couple of pictures in here. Oh, actually, this was from Pope Francis's World Youth Day in Rio. I mean, that's the Copacabana.
That looks like a party.
And that's not even at its fullest.
What?
I know. It was crazy.
I think there's more people than sand on the beach.
4 million people on that beach.
That
it was pretty crazy.
I that's borderline gross, actually.
I'll show you those pictures later on, because after the day was over, there was a very interesting tint to the ocean.
The water got warmer.
So we're going to plug this in. But you'll notice, Alex, if you go back, two of these files, I just renamed them. So, for example, let's fix this. We're going to put .jpg.
Okay.
So this picture is actually this one.
Oh,
so we're going to see if Sad Puppy can survive WannaCry if we disguise him. So we're going to... Oh, gosh, look at this.
WannaCry, don't go after Droopy Dog.
Let's see. This is the thing I do not like. I have to change settings. I totally forgot about this.
Press Alt.
Yeah.
Alt and tools.
Good thing we have a Windows expert here.
Gosh,
and
hold
tools
on.
Tools and folder options.
I'll just do this. This is the old way... Oh, wow. Hi. Wake up. Folder options. We need to see all of the files. I keep setting this, and I forget to put it into the default settings. There we go.
I see. Yeah, because these are all like fresh installs that you do.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah, every time. Well, you want it to be. So we're going to hide this one as, instead of a JPEG, we're going to call it a DLL, Dynamic Link Library. So I've got two of these. I've got that one, and I've got this one. In fact, this this is an award document. Let me prove it. I don't docx. So if I open that up, this is the text that's in there. Okay. So that's the text that should be if should still be there if WannaCry doesn't work on it.
Right.
And then I'm going to call this one an exe because we called the other one a DLL. So I've totally messed with two files. Mm-hmm. The document is now an exe and the picture is now a DLL. So let's see if WannaCry passes up on
them. Okay, I'm curious.
Kind of curious. But what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to disconnect this. So this will not be reconnected until this computer is already infected.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
So should we let's go ahead and kick off.
Let's do it.
Let's kick off. So
see it.
We've got sample data here. So this is the data that's on the computer. And again, it's it's on the computer. There we go. So these are our files, the only data files on this computer that can possibly be encrypted.
Should be dope.
And let's go ahead and hook up our WannaCry's USB.
Don't get those mixed up.
Do not get them mixed up.
Can I borrow one of these flash drives? I have some pictures I want to move off of this laptop.
Yeah, that's,
probably shouldn't.
That's probably a good idea. No. You should totally do that. All right, so we're going to go ahead and open this up, and we are going to copy over our viral sample. Ta-da! Wow, this is running really slow. Hey, dude, not much to discover. It's 10 megs.
Well, this is an older machine, right? You pulled this out of
Well, I mean, it's still it's like an AM1. It's way faster than this. I don't know what's going on. This is kind of weird, actually.
It's already infected.
It took like 30 seconds to copy 10 megs. That's weird. All right, so we got our WannaCry viral sample right here. We're going to put this down into the corner. And we've got our sample data. We're going to watch this get encrypted. We're going to put it up here. One more little bit that we're going to want to open up is we're going to go ahead and open up a task manager. So we can follow what it's doing.
Yeah.
There we go. So like so. And one of the things that you're going to want to do, and this is going to be important for the later segment, I want to select my columns. I want to add one. The PID, that's the process identifier. The reason why we're going to want this is because we want to know the PID number of the WannaCry software as it runs. That's the unique identifier that will allow WannaKiwi to go through the memory allocated to the process and look for the primes.
Ah, that's cool. And the way that's allocated, is that just whatever process starts up
totally
in the background,
random.
Windows
totally,
just assigns
just
a number.
Pulls out the next process.
Very cool.
All right, so let's go ahead and let's cry.
let's cry.
Okay, good. So it's running, and the way I know it's running is, first of all these extra files have shown up over here. In just a second, over in the sample folder, we're going to see it start to expand the number of files here. Oh, there we go. So it's added all the encrypted files. And if we look here, if we sort this by CPU, the wcry.exe, it's actually not using that much. So there's something wrong with this installation. It's lagging on everything.
Now it's using 25%.
Oh, there we go. Okay, so now, 25%, that's about right. So when they designed this, they didn't want it to max out the CPU, because if they did that,
it would be really obvious.
Somebody would be like,
something's going on with my computer.
So they wanted it to be able to run in the background just enough so it could do what it needed to do, which is go through all your files and look for the ones that it was going to encrypt and then delete them. And then when the screen comes up, when the background changes and the little ransom screen comes up, that essentially means the process is done. It's done its thing.
Right? That's pretty clever, though, to set a parameter for not using more CPU so it doesn't get discovered.
I mean, I would have done it differently. Again, what I would have done is I would have waited. I would have let it sit and kind of gather intel and then run this. Yeah. Which, by the way, once again, remember, because people did ask, could the person running this net be able to see into my computer? And some people were saying no, because it's just ransomware. That's not true, because this also installs Double Pulsar, which is a NSA backdoor.
Mm-hmm.
So they could get in. They probably wouldn't, because it's not all that interesting. They just want the money. But they could.
Is this like the cyber equivalent of like a snatch and grab, like breaking someone's window and trying to grab some, get whatever you can?
Yeah. And again, remember, we talked about this last week. This is not an elegant attack.
No.
It really isn't. I mean, it's just like every other ransomware with the addition of a backdoor and the worm component.
Well, that's the scary part about this one is the piggybacking on more sophisticated intrusion software.
Well, there's a new one.
Software.
That this uses two NSA exploits. It uses the double pulsar and the blue component, which is what they use.
SMB?
The SMB, right, the exploit. There's a new one out there that uses seven. So they're just stacking these things on top of each other.
Call it the Hydra.
All right. Now, while that's running, Alex, if you go ahead and go back over to HDMI 1.
He's got it.
I believe it is. There we go. So, again, this is what you're seeing on the network. Some of this is legitimate traffic. You've got McAfee, which is a software that's installed on this. It's trying to find the time. You've got the Windows update server that's trying to go on. But you're starting to see, again, those LLMNR packets. And remember, those are multicast. So every time you see one of those packets, it was this computer blasting out to the network who's here. It's talking to everyone at the same time.
So if there's another computer connected, it would be encrypting that too.
It would be attempting to.
Right.
So it would have to be another Windows 7 box in this particular case.
Okay.
And an unpatched Windows 7 box.
So if there, all right. So even if there's an unpatched Windows 7 box on your network that has been infected, if you have a Windows 10 machine on that same network, it won't
not vulnerable. Okay. Which is weird because Windows 10 does have technically that Samba vulnerability, but it will not be infected.
Okay.
Yeah, you can run WannaCry on a 10 machine if you ignore all of the warnings and basically said, now I know what I'm doing.
Right, you're just clicking through.
When Windows is going, hey man, I'm like 99% sure this is going to mess you up. Do you still want me to run this? And if you say yes, then okay, you deserve what you get.
Okay.
Don't do that. Don't do that, folks.
Because I think that one of the big fears we had here was that somebody would get it on their personal machine,
bring it to the
network, log in, and then it would spread that way.
Yeah, and that would be, I think we could all agree that's a sad thing.
That'd be bad.
That's a sad face.
Okay.
Sad face. All right, so if we go back to HDMI 2 here, this is still running. Now, typically this takes about 4 minutes, so this is running extraordinarily slow. There's probably something wrong with this particular instance. I wouldn't be surprised if I was actually wearing out my SSDs because I re-imaged these so many times.
Writing back and forth on them, yeah.
Right. But it's already gotten to the point where it's deleted the old files. So these are all the... we go. Come on, give me that warning screen. Give me the warning screen. There we go.
And there it is, with the timer and everything.
So I've got 2 days, 23 hours, 59 minutes to give them $300 worth of bitcoins. And this is that bitcoin address if anyone wants to send them money just to say hello.
Yes, let me send you my bitcoins. Actually, if they are accepting Dogecoins, I'd be totally down.
Yeah,
I've got Dogecoins.
Doge. All right,
okay.
So now what we've got is we've got this. So this is our uninfected USB drive. Uh-huh. We showed you that these files are not yet encrypted, right? The question was, if I plug in a USB drive after the process has run, will it be encrypted? And people wanted to know how fast it will be encrypted.
Right.
Okay, so
that's a good question.
Alex, if you go to the overhead, and then you're going to go straight to the screen. So here we go. Maybe you can start counting it down.
And
it gets connected.
Drive is connected.
And let's go ahead and open it up.
And it looks like a removable disk is there.
And there's a sample data. And, oh, look at that.
Wow.
Even before I could get to the folder, it's attacking the files.
That's quick.
That's super, super quick. So, again, anything, and it's not just USB.
Yeah.
Anything that this can attach to after it's been infected, it will try to encrypt.
Now, see, this is where you had mentioned earlier if you had designed the software and it would be much more destructive.
Subtle.
Or subtle if you waited, because if you sat on it and waited for somebody to plug more stuff in or waited for more computers to come online to the network, it could be like twice or, you know, how many ever times
and
more devastating.
That's more of a targeted attack. You were right. This is more of a smash and grab. They really don't care about what files they encrypt. They just want you to pay them.
Right.
If I was looking to mess somebody up,
right,
I would wait for maximum damage. They're not trying to do maximum damage. They just want you to be inconvenienced enough that you'll give them $300 worth of Bitcoin.
Yeah, because I guess you could set the parameter of, like, wait 2 weeks, see how many devices have connected. If you reach this many devices, unleash payload.
Now, Alex, if you go back to that HDMI 2, you will notice it's taking a while to delete the old files. You know what I'm actually going to do? I'm going to yank this, and we're gonna run it on a new installation and see if maybe we can get it back. What do you think?
Yeah, let's try it. I'm excited to find out.
Ba-ba! So technically, it hasn't had time to delete the old files yet. You still saw them there. Let's see what happens when we try to bring it up. Now, I'm going to abandon this installation because we don't need it. So I'm just going to go ahead and shut it down.
Shut it down.
Shut her down. And then we're going to install a brand new SSD, which I've got right over here.
Oh, hi.
Oh, hi. Look at that.
Looks very similar.
Yeah. And actually, I don't even need to wait for the graceful shutdown. I just yank power.
Oh, you've got your little jumper?
Yeah.
Nice.
Super high tech, man. This is a switch.
That button looks really familiar.
That's what happens when you disassemble cases and you just have a bunch of components lying around.
Well, you don't throw anything away, so.
I don't. There we go. So turn this back on. Now, while this is rebooting, I'm going to have to change a couple of things because we want the resolution to be right for the TriCaster.
Right, et cetera, and the folder options, probably.
And the folder options, again, we're going to have to change. So this is going to be a clean installation. It has not yet been exposed to WannaCry, but it does have a very popular undelete program already installed on it.
Okay.
So we're going to use that program to basically, well, see what's up.
See if we can get anything back, yeah.
Okay, so the new installation is up, and let's go ahead and see if we can undelete our files. So remember, the questions that were asked of us is, will this infect a device that you attach after infection?
Yes.
Answer is yes. We know that already. We've got two other questions. Can I undelete the files that WannaCry has deleted?
Right.
And two, can I protect my data files by changing the names to like .dll and .exe?
Mm-hmm. So let's find out.
Let's answer those in reverse order. Alex, if you go back over. This is the USB drive that I had plugged into the other installation.
That got encrypted.
But remember, we pulled it before it was able to delete the old file. So let's test this really quickly. This is the whole, if you noticed that WannaCry was encrypting your files, could you shut off your computer really quickly before it had a chance to delete?
Right.
Well, if that's true, then I should be able, it looks okay. It's a .jpg file. I should be able to click this and...
Oh, no. So, as it encrypts, does it write over the old file?
It's overwriting the old files so that you can't. Even if the file is still there, it's not actually there. In fact...
So undeleting won't work either.
It will not. Well, we'll see. We'll see. Now, let's test the other thing. The other thing is, remember, we changed two of the files to .dll and .exe, right?
Right.
So the question is, did it still affect them?
Those are supposed to be the files that were hiding.
Uh-huh. So integration.exe, we're going to change this back to integration.docx. And what did WannaCry do to it? If
anything. It probably should have passed over it because it's not a file it was looking for.
Hey, how about that?
Okay, so that makes sense because if it was looking for .exes or anything like that...
It would screw
like
up the Windows installation.
Which would then negate the whole process.
Precisely. Yeah. So it can't encrypt DLLs and EXEs because then the operating system would stop working and that defeats the purpose of holding your system at ransom because it just borked your whole system, not just ransomed it.
But the practicality of hiding your files as different
not
file
great.
Extensions is kind of silly. But.
Of course, we got to check the DLL as well. So did it do it for the DLL? If we change this back to JPEG.
I'm guessing
Do we
not.
Get the puppy? Oh, the sad puppy is back.
He survived.
Oh, he's so cute. Okay, so that's confirmed. So if you asked if there was a way to preserve your files, yes, if
That's
you wanted to go through your
way.
Entire document folder and change everything to DLL or EXE.
Or just make a copy of all your files and then change the extension so you have, I don't know.
I mean, personally, it would be a lot easier to like save it in the cloud where you could reverse revisions or onto a NAS that's then disconnected. But
it's good to know.
That's me.
It's good to know.
That's me. All right. But the other question we had was, would undelete work?
Right.
So let's take a look. So if we open up Undelete 360 here, we're just going to let it run on this this drive to see if there's anything that couldn't be recovered. And you know, you already can kind of see where we're going here because it actually encrypts these files before it overwrites them. It's probably not going to work. But let's see.
Hmm.
Okay. So we need to search. We're going to search for files in the removable drive.
Okay.
And it thinks it's found a couple. So
status overwritten.
Overwritten.
Yeah. So that makes sense.
It did its job. I mean, that's what WannaCry wants to do. It wants to make sure that you can't just use one of these tools to get it back. So unfortunately, the answer to that is no.
Well, And then just the fundamental idea of, even if you were using encryption for your own files, you wouldn't want to encrypt your files and then also have a copy of
that
those files
recovered.
That could be recovered. So it's like the whole idea of encryption that like it would overwrite the old file.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry about that, folks. But on the good side, we do know that if you want to hide all your files as executables, you can do that.
Or just give them a different executable, like .NSA, I think someone suggested in the chat room.
I don't know. We should have tested that. I don't know if that... I wonder if it just looks for known data types. Because if it looks for known data types, you can make up your own extension.
Exactly.
But a year down the road, you're going to like, is this a JPEG or a doc or a movie file?
No, I named all my movie files .awesome, and I named all my pictures .crazy, so I think I'll remember.
But this is interesting because it shows you that WannaCry is not going through the process because it could examine every file and just look at the header so that even disguised files it would know.
Yeah.
It's not doing that. It's just looking at extensions.
Right. Because if it compromises the system working, then they can't get money.
That's bad.
Yeah.
That's bad.
They just want to hold your files ransom.
Yeah. Folks, when we come back, we've actually got a little something for people to defend themselves. The technology's been around for a while. Maybe WannaCry is the event that's going to force more of us to think a bit more thoughtfully about what we do to keep our data and our digital lives safe.
And that weapon is a shotgun.
Shotgun.
If you get WannaCry,
digital
shoot your hard drive.
Or thermite.
Destroy it. Yeah, thermite.
Thermite works too. But before we do that, let's go ahead and take this moment for these messages.
Previously on Twit.
Jeff Jarvis is here, unusually next to me, which means I can do... And that's great.
This Week in Google.
So the reason he mentioned this image recognition improvement is to announce a new project called Google Lens.
I have been wanting this forever because I like constantly do things like walk through my yard and I'm like, ooh, is this a weed or is it a plant? Can I eat
this?
Also, can I eat this?
That's something that a human would be not as good at, right?
The new screensavers.
The Maker Faire in San Mateo. This is the original, the 12th annual. We met a lot of fans, but also saw a lot of cool stuff. These are shadow boxes kids made. Maker Faire is so fun because it just shows human creativity. Ingenuity,
and scales.
And technology.
Know-how.
This week we're going to do something a little bit different, which is deliberately infecting your network. This is something you should not do. Let's go ahead and run it.
Twit, making the world safe for technology.
So this is the screen. Oh,
what happened to my computer?
And we're back. Okay, so Brian, are you thoroughly scared yet?
Yeah, as scared as I am, I have an equal amount of curiosity just playing with it. Yeah.
That's the thing that's been fun. Again, I'm not a security researcher, but I enjoy playing with this sort of stuff.
Especially the questions that we've gotten into, where it's like, yeah, okay, like that's not practical, but I want to know.
Yeah.
I want to play around with it, poke holes in it.
And we are going to do another round of infections, so we're going to try that whole .alex.crankyhippo extension.
Yeah, and see if it goes after those. Yeah.
But let's move away from that, because last year at the Intel Developer Forum, I had a chance to speak with a representative of a company who has a solution for everything from standard viruses to worms to things like ransomware. What if you could surf the web with impunity? What if you could run applications without worrying about them destroying your operating system? What if you had sort of a magical back key that could always undo any mistake you make? Well, folks, that's not fantasy. That's Bromium. Endpoint isolation is no laughing matter to system admins. In fact, at home, in my office, I actually have a machine, my Synology box, that runs several containers running my browsers because I'm so worried about those browsers getting owned and then having visibility into my network. Well, that setup is not very practical for most people. So instead, if you're running an enterprise, why not speak to the folks at Bromium, because they've got a way to use micro VMs to protect your network. I'm speaking with Simon Crosby. Simon, what is a micro VM?
A micro VM is an isolation construct built using Intel VT and other security features on CPU like SGX to isolate a single task on the end user operating system. So for example, every single tab of my browser, or perhaps every document I get which is an attachment to my email, files from a USB key, anything you send me via Skype, or Twitter, they're all independently hardware isolated from each other and from the operating system.
This is not a new methodology. We've had this around for a while. I could always run a VM on my box and, you know, bring it up and then run whatever it is that I'm questioning and see what it does. But the issue has been resources. I don't want to sit there and wait 3 minutes for a VM to spin up before I can actually get into the file. What have you done to make that less of a drag on my time?
Oh, that's a great question. So for me, a micro VM is 15 milliseconds, okay? So on that, and that's on a Core i3 or i5 or i7 CPU. So what's happening here is we're doing an instant in-memory fast clone of Windows or Mac OS, depending on whichever you're running. And then essentially that there are a couple of other memory pages that are pinned there, but basically we're taking the page table state from the CPU, marking it all as read-only, putting it into a new Intel VT VMCS, and we have a new VM which is running. And then as it runs, it's going to execute copy on write. And what that means is that if it changes any memory locations in user mode or in the kernel, those are going to be changed in its own memory context. So we'll copy stuff in. The hypervisor does this. And then it changes its own state. So I'll give you an analogy for that. If I put you in the top of a very tall building and say, can you change the city skyline? But I give you a dry erase pen, you can scribble on the windows. Okay, so that's copy on write. You're changing things, but not really. And so these things execute a task, one task only. It might be a browser renderer. It could be a Word document or something, PDF doc. And there are amazing benefits that accrue. First of all, because there's only one task in the micro VM, we get to be able to analyze its behavior in excruciating detail. We record every packet it sends or receives, every touch on memory, on the virtual file system, on the registry. And whether we know that it's good or bad, we do this. And so then we can look for deviations from good. Rather than looking for bad, which is the problem of antivirus today, you look for deviations from good. So if it just behaves weirdly, I just start to send all of these forensic details up to security team, to the SOC, and we do this in real time from the protected perspective of the microvisor. So that's benefit one. We get to use every endpoint as a sensor at a very granular basis for everything it runs. Second, the moment I close that document or the tab of my browser, one instruction on the CPU, the whole thing gets zeroed out, and so it self-remediates, which is awesome. So users never need to worry about it. So even if I have CryptoLocker, it's just a don't care. Okay, so the system becomes self-protecting and self-remediating by design. Now we take those forensic fragments, which are centralized to the SOC, and we then go and search every other endpoint in the enterprise to see if we can see this thing anywhere else. And we have excruciating details. So we see things that are not typically on people's blacklists and so on. And so my PC, which is an unprotected Windows 7 system that has never been patched, running legacy Java and legacy Flash, protects itself on an unprotected network just with hardware. It's very cool. We do this one other thing with SGX, which is worth pointing out because SGX gives me the ability to further protect user credentials on the operating system by encrypting them in user mode in an SGX enclave, so that even if the system somehow got corrupted by malware, that those high-value credentials, and you could put other stuff in there too, cannot be stolen and dumped and used to go further into the enterprise.
Yeah, the way I see it is that Bromium is really providing me with three key features. The first is endpoint isolation. The second point is application security. If one of my applications gets breached, if it gets owned, if there's malware, if there's a crypto locker on it, I just kill it and it's done. It doesn't affect anything else because it doesn't have visibility to anything else. Right. But the third part, and this is the part that really excites me, is this idea that every endpoint, every application, every micro VM that is brought up gives my enterprise just a little bit more data. If I see an attack that starts to hit 5, 10, 20, 100 of my endpoints, I know this is something that I need to start warning my users about.
Correct. These detailed forensics are fabulous because in general, the security team is wondering who's attacking them. And malware changes so quickly, it lasts today less than a minute. And so we get these detailed forensics which allow us to go and look for signs of execution elsewhere in the enterprise environment, which are extraordinarily valuable, and that automates the entire kill chain analysis and remediation response on the part of the enterprise. So you don't have people sifting through essentially a haystack of alerts. First of all, there are no false alerts here. I want to be very clear, there are no false alerts. Why? Because we wait until it's arbitrarily bad. So we know it's bad, and then we get all this detail, and then we can go and automate the process of response.
Simon, thank you very much for speaking with us. Thank you for sharing this technology.
My pleasure.
If they wanted to find out more about Bromium, maybe if they wanted to find out where they could talk to someone to potentially deploy it in their network, where can they go?
I'm Simon at Bromium.com, B-R-O-M-I-U-M, or you can go to www.bromium.com.
Thank you again. Thank you again. And folks, if you're looking to protect something really, really big, Bromium suggests you use something really, really small.
Really small.
It's very cool tech. I mean, that's where we're going, between containers, VMs, and micro VMs.
Mm-hmm.
We're starting to realize there's almost no reason to be running as root, running as administrator. I mean, this is something that OS X and Linux folks have known for a long time. Windows folks are just starting to come around to it, which is, it's, you know, you want to run things in a way that's not going to affect anything else on the computer.
Yeah, that makes sense. The kind of the almost the onion approach of layers to things, separate, put barriers between things so that if you do have a section that's compromised, it doesn't then spread to the entire network.
And the protection is just one part of that type of solution. And there are many solutions, not just Bromium, but many solutions that use VM, micro VM, or whatever they want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you spread it out over an enterprise, because you can get data from every instance, which starts to demonstrate bad things,
right,
you can develop a protection much more quickly.
Yeah, a way of detecting much something sooner.
Precisely.
So you could then prevent something like WannaCry spreading to other machines when you see it. Like, why are all the, what is it,
LLMNR.
Yeah. LLMNR.
Local link, multicast, name resolution.
Like, why are all these going out to all these different machines? Why is this broadcasting trying to find all this
Precisely.
Stuff?
Precisely. And more of the solutions that are coming out today. Because remember, the way that we used to do it was to blacklist. Blacklist things that we don't like.
Mm-hmm.
That works, except there's always new things that are being developed that list will not be able to deal with.
Right.
Now what they're doing is saying, no, this is what a snapshot looks of good.
Right.
This is what a well-behaved
network.
This is what a well-behaved network, what a well-behaved client looks like. Mm-hmm. If it deviates from that, then I take a closer look. That's a much better approach.
Yes. Have you tried this attack in a virtual machine?
Yes.
Yeah, and no.
It will affect that instance,
but it won't then spread from that,
right? Yeah. Because as soon as you exit out of it, it goes back to its old self.
Okay.
You cannot affect that old image unless you write an attack to go after that image. But even then, that wouldn't work, because inside the instance cannot see the original image. The instance can only see the container in which it exists.
It just makes me feel like we should be using containers all the time.
Entirely, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, go figure. Now, folks, when we come back, this is what you've been waiting for. We are going to try out a decryptor. This is something that all of you are going to want to keep on a special flash drive or perhaps preloaded on your computer if you're running Windows. Because we know, well, it's always better to prepare before the flood. But before we get there, let's go ahead and take a moment for these messages.
Here's a look at just a few of the stories we'll be watching in the week ahead. Microsoft is holding an event in Shanghai, where we expect to see an update to the Surface Pro. Rumors and leaks show not much of a redesign for the new Surface Pro, which will probably just be called the Surface Pro instead of the Surface Pro 5. Say goodbye to Hangouts SMS messaging. Google is removing the option this week on May 24th. The Women in Engineering International Leadership Conference will be held in San Jose, California this week. Speakers include Lakshmi Puri, Deputy Executive Director of UN Women, and Maria Clow, President of Harvey Mudd College, where half of their current computer science majors are women. And finally, the IEEE Computer Society Technical Committee is holding its 38th Annual Symposium on Security and Privacy, also in San Jose. That's a look at a few of the things we'll be tracking in the coming week. Join Jason Howell and me on Tech News Today every weekday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, here on twit.tv.
And we're back. This is what you've been waiting for. This is WannaKiwi.
Kiwi.
Not
WannaWiki.
I keep wanting to say WannaWiki.
WannaWiki?
Yeah, but no, it's that's not Kiwi. It. So this is something that a couple of security researchers figured out. So the first one was Adrian Guinet. I'm sorry if I'm misspelling or missaying your last name. He's at @AdrienGnt.
On Twitter,
yeah. If you'd like to say hello and say thank you. He developed the WannaKey program. And now the WannaKey program only works on Windows XP. Then another researcher by the name of Benjamin Delpy, who is on Twitter at @GentileKiwi, KIWI. Mm-hmm. Again, you can say hello to him. He took that XP solution and he turned it into all versions of Windows solution.
Okay. So yeah. Hence the name WannaKiwi.
Yeah. Okay. But this is how it works. To understand how these programs work, you have to understand how WannaCry works. What WannaCry will do is when it starts encrypting, it's going to generate two keys, public key and private key. Mm-hmm. Now, it works just like PGP. So the public key can be seen by everyone, but you need the private key combined with that in order to decrypt.
To unlock, yeah.
Right. But what it will do is after it encrypts, it will delete the private key. So the private key no longer exists on the computer, so you have to buy that private key from the ransomers.
But there is a time where that private key exists in memory on the infected device.
Precisely. Now, WannaCry will delete that from memory, but what these researchers realized was it does not generate the two prime numbers that WannaCry uses to develop that private key. So what it will do is it will randomly select two prime numbers, and it will do multiplication, and then it will hash it out to create the private key.
Right.
These researchers realized that WannaCry is such a poorly written program that they don't actually remove the primes from memory. Now, they don't save them, but they sit there until they get overwritten. So if you can get in fast enough, you can recover the two primes and you can reverse engineer the key combined with the public key that it will find.
Right.
It will allow you to decrypt the files. And the best thing about this is they created it to be automatic.
Oh, that's great.
So you just write it and it will go. Now,
but chances of it working...
Yeah. Okay, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. People read the story and they were celebrating. Oh, now we have a way. This shouldn't affect anybody anymore.
Right.
That's where all the headlines were. That's so not true. It's incredibly, incredibly not true. Because you've got to remember, this is relying on the fact that the prime numbers will stay in memory. So the PID, the process identifier, it allocates a certain address of memory, a range of memory. Mm-hmm. In that range of memory will be the prime numbers that it used. However, there is nothing that protects those ranges. So if for any reason the program stops or the program reuses those cells of memory, it will not work. If it cannot find the primes because the primes have been overwritten, it cannot decrypt.
And so you were telling me earlier you conducted this experiment a few times.
I did it 10 times.
You did it 10 times. How many times did it work?
Twice.
Yeah, that's not
and
a great ratio.
It was basically the exact same process every single time. So you got to get lucky. Now, here's the thing. If you're gonna want the solution, you're gonna want it on your computer already. So you want to download it. You want to have it in a directory ready to run just in case. Because if you have to go through the process of finding this and then copying it to your computer and then running it, it's a very good chance that enough time has elapsed that memory location has been overwritten.
Okay. So what is the perfect storm that you should have this, like, you have an unpatched Windows machine for whatever reason, you should have this on your computer just in case?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
Now, the other things, and you've probably heard this in the news before, you cannot restart. If you restart, this won't work because it's flushed all the memory. The second thing is you cannot close the process. Some people will freak out and they'll try to close the process in the task manager, mm-hmm. which will end the encryption process, but everything's still encrypted, and now you've lost that memory. It's released the memory range. It's been overwritten. It's gone.
Okay.
All right. So, Alex, if you go back to this computer, this is, again, the fresh installation of Windows 7. I've got a couple of things here. This is the sample data that exists on the SSD. This is the sample data that exists on the USB drive. Now, you'll notice, to test our little theory that maybe it doesn't affect non-common extensions, I've renamed a couple of our extensions. So the photo of the puppy is now known as that funny name, Beatmaster. This one's known as Drew Nielsen.
I recognize these names.
Yeah, and I've changed a couple down here. I've got a CR1. So this document has the extension of CR1, and this document has the extension of Alex. So if WannaCry is really only looking at common extensions, doc, docx, jpeg, .mov, maybe it will pass them up. We'll see.
And it doesn't hurt my feelings that there's no Cranky Hippo in there or anything.
Well,
my own extension.
We're here. I mean, we're
cool.
We don't have to be there.
Whatever.
Oh, whatever. All right, so the other thing that we've got running is, of course, we've got our task manager up. Mm-hmm. And hold on. And let's go ahead and kick this off. Now, I should mention, to give myself the best possibility of making this work, I'm going to go ahead and bring up the command window. I'm going to run this as an administrator. I'm kind of cheating already, so I'm giving myself an advantage in that I am preparing for this. Let's go ahead and increase the font size here so that you can see it a little easier. I want to be ready for this infection, so I'm going to go ahead and go into my directory for WannaCry, WannaKiwi, and here there's just one file. So I'm going to run WannaKiwi.exe after it's done its encryption thing.
Okay.
So if it's going to work, this is the best possible chance for it to work.
So if you think you're in imminent danger of getting WannaCry, and just have this at the ready.
Again, it's just cool. This is cool to see. All right, let's go ahead and kick it off. So we're going to kick off our infection, and as soon as we see, oh, there we go. So those files are showing up. And if we go over to these, let's see, how fast will these start encrypting? We're going to find out in just a second. And give it the, there we go.
There
okay, so
go.
It started. Now, already, our assumption is good because it seems to be leaving alone those files that have the extension Beatmaster and Drew Nielsen. I will mention, though, because we already tested this, if you were to change the extensions now back to the originals,
it would grab them.
It would encrypt them. Just like when we plugged in that fresh USB drive, it encrypted everything on the USB drive. So we're gonna let this go. Let's make this honest. So we're going to let this encrypt all the files, and we're going to let it get to the central command screen. And once we're at the central command screen, we'll go ahead and see if it works.
So even if you kill the process, it's still looking for files, yeah.
Well, no, I mean, the problem is it's already encrypted so much.
So say it's encrypted, we get the splash screen of like, oops, your computer's encrypted. You kill the background process
and then change
the file name?
No, you can't.
You can't. Okay.
If you kill the background process, the WannaKiwi will no longer work.
Okay.
Because remember, if you kill the process, it releases that memory. That memory is where the prime numbers are going to be stored. I need that to be able to try to reverse engineer it.
And that's why they were saying if you reboot, then those are gone. Anyway.
Yeah, completely gone. Okay. That's all in volatile memory. Something else you may want to notice here, if we go into processes, WCry is process 1364. This will change. That's what it is this particular time. Sometimes, not often, but sometimes when you run WannaKiwi, it has trouble finding which process is the encryption process.
So you have to put it in manual then?
You would put WannaKiwi.exe and then 1394, and it would know exactly where it is.
Right.
It's actually pretty good about finding it, so I'm pretty sure this is just going to do it automatically. Mm-hmm. But if you run it the first time and it gives you an error message, don't give up. It just means you need the PID in order to tell WannaKiwi exactly where that memory location is.
Got it.
So we're going to let this run for just a little bit longer. Now, while we're letting this run, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about the other day is in defending myself from WannaCry. It's good to have a tool like this, but it's impractical. As we've already pointed out,
it's cool to
unless
see
you're
how
just,
it works.
Yeah, you're kind of assuming that you're going to get infected and you've already put everything on your computer.
Yeah.
Just the process of moving files on and off of your computer can overwrite a memory location. And anything you do with the little WannaCry screen can overwrite a memory location. So you have to be really careful with that.
Okay.
Yeah. This is not like running a malware fixer. This is such a shot in the dark. And again, my success rate was about 20%. There's a good chance it's not going to work for this.
No, this is definitely like a special use case kind of thing. But there are situations, I'm thinking of my own situation, where my wife's computer is still running Windows 7 and I don't think it's ever been updated, and she turns it on like once every 3 months or so. There is a chance that she could get this.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think I'm going to go through the process of setting up WannaKiwi, but I should probably set up that, get that machine like updated.
At the bare minimum, download WannaKiwi and put it on a flash drive and label it and keep it in the desk.
Yeah.
because you want to give yourself the best possible chance. And time is absolutely essential here. If you
this is like a car crash or something. Yeah. You know? Like, we got to get to that computer
it's
now.
Triage. Yeah, you've got a minute or two before that those prime numbers are probably going to be overridden, and then this is not going to work. And now you're looking at either paying the ransom or just restarting. Something else we should mention, because people were wondering, well, if I unencrypt, if WannaKiwi works and I get all my files back and I remove WannaCry, that's it, right?
Yeah.
No. Okay, first, we already know that there's a backdoor that's installed, double Pulsar. Secondly, anytime, and I don't care what operating system it is, Windows, Linux, OS X, if it gets infected with anything, I wipe it. Mm-hmm. There we go. Okay, so we're coming back?
Yeah, don't trust that there isn't a backdoor. Wipe the machine.
Yeah, okay. So I know the signs, so it's changed my background. And the next thing that's going to pop up is a little ransom screen.
Here's the UAC question. What is this?
Yeah.
Program, see, yeah.
Ta-da! All right, so it's encrypted. Let's see if we can unencrypt it. So WannaKiwi.exe. I actually don't have to put the .exe. And I'm going to put 13... Actually, I don't need to put 1394, but it's going to find it.
Yeah. If it doesn't, you'll need to put the PID.
There we go. So what it's doing now is it needs to find the public key. And once it finds the public key and finds the process ID, it can start going through the memory location.
Public key.
Okay, so it's found the public key. So that's my public key. It found WannaCry with PID of 1364.
So I've figured it out.
All right. So what it's going to do now is it's actually going through the memory allocated to that process, to PID 1364, and it's looking for primes.
Right.
It's just going to keep searching through this memory, and if it finds two primes, it knows that those are the numbers that were used to generate the key. And once it has those numbers, it can backwards engineer it, get the key back. Now, if this is successful, it will take that newly generated private key, combine it with the public key, and it should just automatically start decrypting my files.
Right. And the reason if it isn't able to find the prime numbers is that memory has already been written over.
That memory has been overridden.
Okay. Yeah. How long does this usually take?
I mean, I had one run that went into decryption phase within 30 seconds.
Wow.
And the second run, which was like run number 7 or so, it took an hour and a half.
Wow.
But I think that's mostly because of this computer.
It's
kind of a janky computer.
Yeah, that last hard drive you're using seemed like it might be on its way out.
I think this one
is running a little bit smoother.
This one's a little bit faster. Now, I actually don't have a lot of hope for this because I was thinking more of the 30-second one.
Yeah.
What we will do is we're going to make sure that we put a video of an actual successful decryption run. But again, the reason why we're doing this is to show you this is not a solution that you can count on. It's a solution that's last ditch. It's a solution that may or may not work. We've told you how it works, but Alex, if you go there, this looks like it's just going to search and search and search and search.
Does it give you a failed search at all?
No, it's just going to keep going through the memory. Yeah. I mean, we'll let this run because there is a chance that eventually it will decrypt. We're not doing anything. There's nothing else that's running on this computer right now.
Yeah.
I haven't closed the process, so that memory is still active. Now, there was one other thing that we wanted to test. We were going to test if changing the extension saved those files from Oblivion.
Right.
So, Alex, if you go back to this other computer, please. Where we got, that's all
it's
the attack
monitoring,
traffic.
The traffic, yeah.
Yay. So we've got our WannaCry files here, but let's find out what happened to Drew Nielsen and Beatmaster and CR1.
Are they still there?
Yeah. So Beatmaster, this was originally a JPEG. And let's see. And the puppy is back! Woo-hoo. And let's find out what Drew Nielsen looks like.
I've always wondered.
Yeah, right? It's one of those mysteries.
He's and a beach that is full back. Of people.
And of course, it means that CR1 and Alex should be back to normal once I rename those documents.
See, that makes sense. No. That you would make an inclusion list, not an exclusion list.
And again, it's going to start. I forgot I have Word on this computer. And there we go. It's back.
It's still there.
So that works. That actually does work. But again, just like renaming it .dll and so on and so forth. Yeah.
Not really practical.
That's not super, super practical.
At least we know, though.
Yeah. Alex, if you go back to this, the other one, I am very doubtful that this is going to decrypt.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, and we gave ourselves the best possible chance. I mean, we had it up. It was ready to run. It was loaded. Something in there overwrote those memory locations. Now, we're going to let this run, and maybe it will be able to decrypt, but I don't have high hopes.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, we are going to include a clip of this definitely on our YouTube channel, and hopefully, if this finishes up fast enough,
we'll
publish this.
Cool.
Yeah. So, again, I don't want to get people's hopes up. That's why we wanted to cover this. Definitely download WannaKiwi. Have it available. Have it ready to run.
Give yourself the best shot.
Yeah, because, a 20% chance is better than a 0% chance, but don't think it's going to rescue you.
Right. Like, I don't care. I'm going to go all these crummy websites because I don't care if I get WannaCry because I can fix it. No, not necessarily true.
No, don't do that. Don't do that. One of the other cool things about this is you download this from their GitHub. By the way, only download it from the GitHub. Don't trust anybody. We're not even
going to... Wait a minute.
We will link to the GitHub. We will not link to the file because you want to get it from the source. And if you download it from the GitHub, you can actually get the source code.
Yeah.
So if you want to see what it's doing, and if you have an eye for security, look through what they wrote because it's actually some pretty fascinating. It's very efficient code.
Okay. So don't trust the little pop-up that might come on my screen and say, hey, you might have WannaCry. Download WannaKiwi now.
No, that'd be a bad idea.
That's bad.
Folks, we know that this has been a lot of information, and we want to make sure that you practice safe things, which is why we put all the safe things in our show notes. And Brian, where do we put those show notes?
Well, you can go over to twit.tv/KH, and you don't have to worry about any an infection going there. But you can download the files if you want to download our video files, I should say. Download and subscribe if you go there. And also, this is a multi-part episode, so if you missed the first one, you'll want to go back and check that out.
Yeah. And also, don't forget that we have a presence on the social, specifically on Google Plus. Go to Google Plus, look for KnowHow, and ask to join the group. We just put that step so that we can keep out the spam accounts. But once you're in, you get access to over 11,000 Kitas. That's our know-it-alls. People who can help you with a project, give you an idea for a project, maybe for whom you can be the guru. Maybe if you've got the knowledge and you want to drop it on other people, again, go to Google Plus and look for KnowHow.
And if you want to find out if Padre accidentally gives me a USB with WannaCry on it and infects my machines, I'll probably post something on Twitter if I can get access to the internet anymore. And that would be @cranky_hippo.
Yes. And if you want to find out all the ways that I've encrypted his computer, but very slightly in the background, you can find me at my Twitter address at twitter.com/PadreSJ. Oh, and Brian, we've got a third member of our crew. Very important man.
That's right.
Yeah,
he even has a file extension.
He does have a file extension. We call him Beatmaster.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Beatmaster has
pushes
been here
the buttons
forever. He pushes our buttons. You can find him at twitter.com/ANELF3. Again, that's
excuse Beatmaster. Me, Padre. That's pronounced Alex.
Also, Beatmaster sounds way cooler.
Also, you air gapped that computer, right? So there's no way that it's going to infect the TriCaster.
Oh, no.
It should be good, right?
Oh, wait.
You're good. It's not connected there.
Oh,
But I plugged that USB thing in because there's some images. I wanted that sad puppy.
Oh, yeah, sad puppy.
So I think we're all good here.
Oh, no.
I'm sure the TriCaster's fine.
Oh, no.
Until next time, I'm Father Robert Ballasier.
And I'm Brian Burnett.
And now that you know how...
Don't download malware. The TriCaster broke.
Ah!
We're still here. Don't worry. We fooled you.